Good evening. Thank you all for coming out for tonight's discussion of poetry in turbulent times with Tariq Ali. Tariq is probably the foremost writer in the English language on a whole nest of problems which have erupted in our faces right at this moment. He's author of Clash of Fundamentalisms and the most recent, just out, Bush in Babylon. I want to thank you all for being patient, and without further ado, Tariq Ali.
Very good to be here. This meeting is the result of an accident. Fred saw me in Berlin some 6 months ago where I was reading and suggested I come and do it here, and I was coming to LA, so it's very nice that we could organize this. In the West these days, by and large, with sort of noble and honorable exceptions, poetry is not linked so much to politics, neither is culture in the old sense of the word. But in large parts of the world, and especially in the Arab world, poetry continues to play a very major part in the life of those countries. There are a number of reasons for this. One is that the oral tradition remains very strong. The other is that most of the politicians in that part of the world are pretty venal. And so the poets have become the conscience of these countries. This isn't to say that politicians aren't venal here, but it hasn't had the same effect so far. And the third reason is that most poetry written by Arab poets in critical and turbulent times is immediately sung by the great singers of that world. And so it's not only is it learnt and recited in cafes and people talk about it, but when, once the big singers take on the poems, then they just travel very, very rapidly all over the world. And so poetry and poets have become, for some, you know, for many years, very dangerous people, because the political leaders, mainly dictators who rule, know what this poetry does and the effect it can have. And so poems are often banned. Poets are banned, sent into exile. I want this evening basically to talk to you about two different forms of poetry. One is very self-critical poetry, because one of the things one hears a great deal of in the West, especially since 9/11, that the Arabs are, you know, there's a sort of generalizations, especially from people like Bernard Lewis, who see Arabs as total stereotypes. And one of the stereotypes of the Arab world is that there is no self-critical spirit in there. They blame the United States for everything. Well, this isn't true. They don't blame it for everything. They blame it for some things, and they blame their own regimes for other things. And one of the poems, which I'm going to read to you first, which spells this out very movingly, is a poem which I first heard in 1967, after Israel's preemptive strikes against Egypt and Syria and the occupation of Palestinian lands, which remains a burning question today. One of the great poets of the Arab world, a Syrian-born poet, Nizar Kabani, essentially a poet who wrote love poetry and erotic poetry, and very sort of effective and evocative poetry at that, suddenly wrote an absolutely savage poem which stunned the Arab world. And I remember traveling soon after that war to Damascus, Egypt, Amman, Beirut, and everywhere you went, every person you met, including people at the top, would say or whisper, "Have you heard Nizar Kabani's latest poem?" And that's when I first heard the name of this poet and the impact he was having in that world. And I just want to read the poem to you. It was written in 1967, but it still has an import message for us today. These are 20 verses he composed, and the Arab name is Hawamish ala Daftar al-Naqsa. The English translation is Footnotes to the Book of Setback. Friends, the old word is dead, the old books are dead, our speech with holes like worn-out shoes is dead, dead is the mind that led to defeat. Our poetry has gone sour, women's hair, nights, curtains and sofas have gone sour, everything has gone sour. My grieved country, in a flash you changed me from a poet who wrote love poems to a poet who writes with a knife. What we feel is beyond words. We should be ashamed of our poems. Stirred by oriental bombast, by boastful swaggering that never killed a fly, by the fiddle and the drum, we went to war and lost. Our shouting is louder than our actions, our swords are taller than us. This is our tragedy. In short, we wear the cape of civilization, but our souls live in the Stone Age. You don't win a war with a reed and a flute. Our impatience cost us 50,000 new tents. Don't curse heaven if it abandons you. Don't curse circumstances. God gives victory to whom he wishes. God is not a blacksmith to beat swords. It's painful to listen to the news in the morning. It's painful to listen to the barking of dogs. Our enemies did not cross our borders. They crept through our weaknesses like ants. 5,000 years growing beards in our caves, our currency is unknown, our eyes are a haven for flies. Friends, smash the doors, wash your brains, wash your clothes. Friends, read a book, write a book, grow words, pomegranates and grapes. Sail to the country of fog and snow. Nobody knows you exist in caves. People take you for a breed of mongrels. We are a thick-skinned people with empty souls. We spend our days practicing witchcraft, playing chess and sleeping. Are we the nation by which God blessed mankind? Our desert oil could have become daggers of flame and fire. We're a disgrace to our noble ancestors. We let our oil flow through the toes of whores. We run wildly through the streets, dragging people with ropes, smashing windows and locks. We praise like frogs, swear like frogs, turn midgets into heroes and heroes into scum. We never stop and think. In mosques, we crouch idly, write poems, proverbs, beg God for victory over our enemy. If I knew I'd come to no harm and could see the Sultan, this is what I would say. Sultan, your wild dogs have torn my clothes, your spies hound me, their eyes hound me, their noses hound me, their feet hound me, they hound me like fate, interrogate my wife and take down the name of my friends. Sultan, when I came close to your walls and talked about my pains, your soldiers beat me with their boots, forced me to eat my shoes. Sultan, you lost two wars. Sultan, half of our people are without tongues. What's the use of a people without tongues? Half of our people are trapped like ants and rats between walls. If I knew I'd come to no harm, I'd tell him, you lost two wars. You lost touch with children. If we hadn't buried our unity, if we hadn't ripped its young body with bayonets, if it had stayed in our eyes, the dogs wouldn't have savaged our flesh. We want an angry generation to plow the sky, to blow up history, to blow up our thoughts. We want a new generation that does not forgive mistakes, that does not bend. We want a generation of giants, Arab children, corn ears of the future. You will break our chains, kill the opium in our heads, kill the illusions. Arab children, don't read about our suffocated generation. We are a hopeless case. We are as worthless as watermelon rind. Don't read about us. Don't ape us. Don't accept us. Don't accept our ideas. We're a nation of crooks and juggler's. Arab children. Spring rain. Corn ears of the future. You are the generation that will overcome defeat. This poem created a total storm throughout the Arab world. Kulthum, the great singer of Egypt who sang it, was told she couldn't sing it anymore. And the poem was banned till after a year, and the poet had to hurry into exile. The ban was lifted by the Egyptian leader Nasser, and the poem could be sung again. And I thought of Nizar Kabani when Baghdad fell earlier this year, and what he would have done with it. But he had died in 97. He died in his exile in London. And he had left one request, that he wanted to be buried in his native city of Damascus. And when they took his body back, an Syrian government plane came to take his body back, and a million people marched behind his cortege as his poems were recited on the streets of Damascus. And I thought of all this when Baghdad fell, and I thought of the great Iraqi poets who have also been in exile. And there were three of them: Sadi Yusuf, Muhammad al-Jawahiri, and Muzaffar al-Nawab. Al-Jawahiri died some years ago, aged 100, in his exile. Sadi Yusuf and Muzaffar al-Nawab remain in exile. And a week after Baghdad fell, I rang up Sadi Yusuf, who was in exile in London, and said we should meet. And he said, yes, we should meet. So we met. And it was quite a strange, moving meeting. And he told me many stories then. And he said, Saddam Hussein used to send us many messages. Come back to Baghdad just for one poetry reading. He sent a message to Yusuf, Muzaffar al-Nawab, al-Jawahiri. Just come back for one poetry reading. And his ambassadors would come and see these poets, and they knew perfectly well that if they went back, there would be at least 500,000 people at the poetry reading. 500,000 people would have come to hear them. There's no doubt about that. And Saddam knew, and Saddam said to them, you're part of that. I know who you are, I know you hate me, but you're part of the heritage of Iraq, come back. And Sadi Yusuf asked one of the messengers, he said, what about us? What are, you know, guarantees? And they got the reply. They said, Saddam said that the blood on his neck will guarantee your lives. And Sadi Yusuf said to me, somehow this was not a very reassuring guarantee. So these poets didn't go back. They didn't go back, but they were very hostile to Saddam. But Sadi Yusuf was equally, if not more, hostile to the thought of a foreign occupation led by the United States, backed by Britain, which was going to occupy his country. He said the worst thing our countries can suffer is foreign occupation. We've been here before. Saddam we would have dealt with in our own time. But this creates a totally new situation. And while Sadi Yusuf, while the preparations for war were going on, there was a meeting in London of Quislings and collaborators on the pay of the US intelligence agencies, where they were deciding the future of Iraq, in a tiny secret hotel in London. And Sadi Yusuf wrote a poem in anger called The Jackal's Wedding. And I asked him, I said, Sadi, why did you call it the Jackal's Wedding? And he said, don't you know? I said, no, I don't. And he said, in southern Iraq, when we were young and growing up in southern Iraq, where most of these poets are from the south, he said, on the summer's night, we used to sleep out in the open. And under the stars. And often, once in different parts, there used to be a conclave of jackals who used to come and mate and make a stench and make a terrible noise. And the next morning, villagers would wake up and say, "God, there was a jackal's wedding last night. Did you smell it?" Then the jackals would move off. They wouldn't return to that village again, and they'd go and do it outside another village. So this gathering in a secret hotel in London, Sadi Yusuf called a jackal's wedding. And he composed a new poem and addressed it to his fellow poet Muzaffar al-Nawab, who was in exile in Damascus just before the war broke. "O Muzaffar al-Nawab, my lifelong comrade, what are we to do about the jackal's wedding? You remember the old days? In the cool of the evening, under a bamboo roof, propped on soft cushions, stuffed with fine wool, we'd sip tea, a tea I've never since tasted, among friends. Night falls as softly as our words, under the darkening crowns of the date palms, while smoke curls from the hearth, such fragrance as if the universe had just begun. Then a cackling explodes from the long grass and date palms, the jackal's wedding. O Muzaffar al-Nawab, today isn't yesterday. Truth is as evanescent as the dream of a child. Truth is, this time we're at their wedding reception. Yes, the jackal's wedding. You've read their invitation. Muzaffar al-Nawab, let's make a deal. I'll go in your place. Damascus is too far away from that secret hotel. I'll spit in the jackals' faces. I'll spit on their list. I'll declare that we are the people of Iraq. We are the ancestral trees of this land, proud beneath our modest roof of bamboo." This poem reached Iraq within 24 hours, thanks to the internet. And was being recited. And all over Iraq, people were referring to this gathering of collaborators as the jackal's wedding. And Sadi Yusuf's name was immediately put on the blacklist of people who wouldn't be allowed into Iraq under the occupation. And so he still carries on in exile. And Muzaffar al-Nawab replied to his friend from his exile. And Muzaffar al-Nawab penned the following warning: "Would you ever forgive a lynch mob because they pulled your stiff corpse from the gallows? And never trust a freedom fighter who turns up with no arms. Believe me, I got burnt in that crematorium. Truth is, you're only as big as your cannons, while the crowds who wave knives and forks simply have eyes for their stomachs." Now, these poets are so widely respected in Iraq today that they're not allowed back. I mean, that's the tragedy. And Muzaffar al-Nawab is a poet who's been expelled before. And, I mean, he's a great, great poet who was expelled from Iraq, sought refuge in Iran, was captured by the secret police of the then Shah of Iran, tortured, handed back to Iraq, escaped again. And he then wrote a very touching poem. "I have accepted my fate is like that of a bird, and I have endured all except humiliation or having my heart caged in the Sultan's palace. But dear God, even birds have homes to return to. I fly across this homeland from sea to sea into prison after prison after prison, each jailer embracing the other." And Sadi Yusuf, when he first left his beloved Iraq and was forced into exile, wrote a poem dedicating it to another fellow poet, Adonis. And he said, in Beirut, when he arrived in Beirut from Basra, he said, a quarter of a century since then, and we arrived to find that Ibn Tamiyah has become the head of a bludgeon, and Al-Muwafiq is still cleaving rebellious slaves from the womb of the earth. Now, these references to historical figures are a regular feature in Arab poetry. And most people know who these names are because they're part of their history, even though it goes back hundreds of years. Ibn Tamiyah was a leading theologian of a school of Sunnis known for ultra-Orthodox interpretations of the religion. So he says Ibn Tamiyah has become the head of a bludgeon. Al-Muwafiq is still cleaving rebellious slaves. Al-Muwafiq was a brutal military commander of Iraq in the 9th century, who put down one of the most epic struggles in the annals of slavery, the Zanj Rebellion in the southern marshes of Iraq, where guerrilla warfare is still going on today. This struggle lasted 14 years, and it was finally crushed by Al-Muwafiq. And so the poet writes, and Al-Muwafiq is still cleaving rebellious slaves from the wombs of the earth. The police of Damascus, Kekas, and the police of Iraq, and the Arabs, American police, and the English, and the French, and the Persian, and the Ottoman police, and the police of the Fatimid caliphs, our families, Kekas, our naive, good-hearted families, our murderous families, we are the children of this madness. Let's be whatever we wish. This tradition of poetry, is something which is so common in that world, and not just that world. It's extremely common in the world where I grew up, which was South Asia, Northern India, later Pakistan. And one used to go to poetry readings even as a kid because everyone knew some excitement was bound to ensue. often these poetry readings would last the whole night. They didn't start till 9:30 or 10 o'clock, and they carried on till the early hours of the morning. And the longer they lasted, the more extemporary the poets became. And if we were very lucky, we would hear an exchange of extemporary erotic poetry, which to us as kids we were not allowed to hear normally. But you could go to these poetry reading sessions and hear it. And then a military dictatorship erupted in Pakistan in 1958, and there was a big clampdown. And there was a very great Punjabi poet, a wonderful poet, self-taught, whose ballads and love poems were amazing, and he often also wrote allegorical poems very critical of landlords and oppressors. But for some time he hadn't recited any poetry, political poetry at all, so a whole group of us, now much older and university students, went to this poetry reading in Lahore, and he was there. And he was reciting, perfectly decent poetry. And we as young students were getting more and more agitated. No one was talking politics. What had happened to our poets? Of course, some of them were in prison. We knew that. But we said, why are the ones who are here, why aren't they talking poetry? So when this great Punjabi poet, Ustad Daman was his name, came on the stage, we said to him in our own language, for heaven's sake, say something. And he got angry and glared at us because he knew us from other poetry readings. We always used to turn up. And when we said, for heaven's sake, say something, he suddenly, got angry, not so much with us, but with the regime, which had scared him into not saying anything. And he said, recited this wonderful couplet, couplets were very common for Punjabi poets. He recited this wonderful couplet in Punjabi. It went, I'll just recite it to you in that language to give you the rhythms of it. Hon ho gaya mojain mojain jiddar takko fojain fojain, which is impossible to translate literally, as all great poetry is, but which I have translated in the following way, which gets as close to it as possible. Now each day is sweet and balmy. Wherever you look, it's the army. And of course, when he recited this poem, the whole place went berserk, you know, and shouted, Mukarrar, repeat it, repeat it. So he repeated it two or three times. And this, all of us chanted the poem back with him. And the next morning, of course, the inevitable happened and he was picked up and arrested. And when he came out after 4 weeks, they didn't keep him in too long. He came out of 4 weeks in prison, and the next time he saw us, and he came up to us and he said, I've had to spend 4 weeks in prison because of you mothers. So don't you ever provoke me again. But there was a very great tradition of protest poetry. And ultimately, when the big movement erupted against the military regime in Pakistan in the late 60s, a mass movement, and finally toppled the dictatorship, poets played a very big part in it. I remember a number of big meetings attended by hundreds of thousands of students when the dictatorship was tottering, and the form of speeches was always this: a political leader, student, working class leader, a woman activist, and a poet. Was not complete without a poet. And another great Pakistani poet, Habib Jalib, who probably out of, you know, he died in his 70s, and of those 70 years must have spent at least 10 or 15 in prison. Not in one consecutive spell, but over the years. And nothing could keep the guy down. And he would say to us, you know, we would collect money for him to feed his family. He had 6 or 7 kids, very poor poet from a very poor working class family. So we would always go collecting money for him, and he would joke and say, that's why I go to prison, because I know you'll collect money and keep me under, because my poems don't sell, he says, as you know. We poets are destined to be poor. But he used to recite the most courageous poetry, you know, attacking presidents, heads of state. And this tradition, while it sort of declined a bit in India and Pakistan with the advent of television, etc., you don't have such massive poetry readings again, but it hasn't totally disappeared. In the Arab world, because of the situation there, this remains quite strong. And it's interesting that there are very few poets, I do wonder sometimes, there are very few poets from the right in these countries. In these countries, I'm not saying that this is a universal phenomenon, because we know perfectly well that there are. But it is just interesting to note that the poets in this part of the world have usually been radicals, communists, anarchists, libertarians of one sort or another. They have never been poets of the right. There are one or two poets who became right-wing in their later youth, and I mean, they were really used to be heckled. I remember very well one of these poets, Hafiz Jalandhari, quite a good poet, but his famous poem he had written at the height of the nationalist struggle against the British Empire. And the first line of that poem was, I am still young, was the line of this long poem. And when he'd sold out and it was the only poem which had really been popular, and when he sold out, he'd written lots of rubbishy poetry praising the heads of state, and knowing no one liked it, people would start heckling. He used to have this old trick of reciting this poem which once used to be very popular. And I remember on one big poetry reading, he recited that poem and he said, "I'm still young." And someone shouted from the third row, "Which drugs are you on then, you son of a bitch?" And that poem was never recited again after that. So people are cruel to poets who they feel have betrayed them and let them down. But this has not happened in the Arab world, where by and large the poets have remained the conscience of the people and the conscience of the nation. And that's why when I write these books, both Clash of Fundamentalisms and Bush in Babylon, for me, writing about the culture and the poetry is not at all meandering, which, you know, sometimes people who don't understand that will say, well, why is there so much poetry in it? The reason there's poetry in it is because it's part of the political culture of these countries. And that's something which is not fully appreciated in the West. Another thing which isn't totally understood in the West is the fact that despite the venal regimes in these countries, you have an incredibly high level of awareness on the part of the population. That you can go into cafes in any big Arab city and you will find people discussing world politics, not just the politics of their region, with an incredible knowledge, even though many of them, not all of them, but some of them might be illiterate. But they know what is going on in the world. And if you compare these conversations, or if someone, some enterprising sociologist, were to go into the Arab world and tape just surreptitiously conversations taking place around the tables and then come to the United States and tape numerous conversations taking place in Starbucks, I guess, it would make a very interesting sociological study. And I think someone should do it. So it's no point saying that the people in the Arab world, simply because they are ruled by corrupt politicians who've sold their souls mainly to the West, are not aware of what's going on. And the same was true in Iraq. It's not that the Iraqi people had too many illusions about Saddam Hussein, as the stories I've told you about these poets show. But they were not prepared to be occupied by the United States. And can one blame them? I mean, it always staggers me, especially in Britain and the United States, that people, serious intelligent people, are surprised to learn that the Iraqis don't like being occupied. I mean, think about it. Which country does like being occupied? Very few. So the fact that there's a resistance in Iraq now is something which we predicted and which has come to pass much quicker than we thought. But this resistance is now also getting the poets writing again. Just before I left London, I asked Sadi Yusuf, I said, "Are you writing?" He said, "Yeah, I'm writing." I said, "Okay. Look forward to reading it soon." And he said, "Yeah, I'm writing." Muzaffar is writing, and the younger poets in Iraq are writing again, because what has happened to us, he said, is just awful. It's so awful. And he said, when I speak to people in Basra and Baghdad, we're not getting half the news of what's being created, what the situation that exists in our country now. And so I come here and say this to you, citizens of the United States, because what you can do, apart from writing poetry or reading poetry, is also being vigilant and alert at what's being done in your name in a distant part of the world. And for this, I think, for the knowledge of what is going on, we have many people to thank, including and foremost amongst them, the poets of Iraq. Thank you.